Yo, what's happening, everybody? My name is Anthony Correnti, and thank you, as always, for checking out another episode of the Dynasty Drive. I appreciate all of the support, as always. If you're new to the podcast here, you can follow me on Twitter, at Dynasty Drive. You can follow the show on Instagram, at the Dynasty Drive. You can like the show on Facebook. And we're cranking out new episodes now every Monday morning here on the podcast feed. Have a great episode for you today. 98th episode of the podcast, so we're creeping up on episode 100. But I had Jay Stein on. You can follow him on Twitter at underscore Jason Stein. He's working through a really, really interesting written article series over with Dynasty Nerds called The Intelligent Fantasy Football Investor. So had him come on, break down the whole premise, the process, how it works, what he's touched on, where he's headed with it. Great conversation that runs just about half hour or so. So make sure you listen to the whole thing and make sure you check out Jay on Twitter at, again, it's at underscore Jason Stein. And definitely check out these articles. I've retweeted them as some of the new ones have come out, but the stuff is really great. He's looking at some pretty interesting things and applying his kind of investment background and using those same principles in fantasy football. So pretty neat. I thought it was interesting and it was a really good conversation. So here we go. Jay Stein talking about being the intelligent fantasy football investor. All right, joining me on today's episode of the podcast is Jay Stein. He's on Twitter at underscore Jason Stein, doing some fantastic written work with the Dynasty Nerds. Jay, what's happening? I appreciate you taking some time to hop on and talk about this intriguing series you've got going with the Dynasty Nerds.
Yeah, hey, Anthony. I really appreciate you having me on Dynasty Drive. I'm super excited to sort of share what I've been working on over at Dynasty Nerds. I do the intelligent fantasy football investor series over there. And I also do a little Debbie content for them, sort of coming up with analytics and prospect profiles for them and doing some mock drafts and stuff on the Debbie side. But I saw your Twitter post a few weeks ago giving new content creators the opportunity to come on your awesome show and share a little bit about what they're working on. So I'm excited to get the opportunity here.
Yeah, man, we appreciate you coming on. And I read through the stuff, the series that you have on Dynasty Nerds, and I'm a fan, so I appreciate you coming on and talking about it. So for anybody that hasn't checked out the Intelligent Investor series that you have going on with the Nerds, why don't you kind of touch on the premise of what the series is, what it goes into, so that we can make sure anybody who wants to check it out knows what they're getting themselves into.
Yeah, so So the present premise of this series is around two main themes. The first is value and valuation as a strategy. And the second is accountability. And so where I'm coming from, I have an investments background. That's what I do for my career. I've been investing in the stock market for about over 11 years now. And the Intelligent Investor series is my way of sort of taking those lessons I've learned, the principles that I've and concepts that I've understood from investment and applying them to fantasy football. So the way I learned to invest in college and grad school was around the principles taught by Benjamin Graham and Warren Buffett on value investing. Value as a strategy at its core is just about buying something for less than its fundamental value. There's lots of principles there, but that's the basis behind it. Benjamin Graham actually has a book called The Intelligent Investor, which sort of inspired this series title here. That's kind of where that comes from. So one of the concepts we learn around this investing principle is that price and value are not the same thing. Price is what you pay for an asset, and value is what you get for an asset. And so I just kind of want to talk, give you a little bit of example there. So Anthony, do you invest in the stock market? Do you have any companies that you own or anything?
Not as much as I should. We're going to have a separate conversation that you can steer me down the right path.
All right. So let's take, for example, Apple, right?
Yeah.
Everybody knows Apple, right?
It trades. I'm a shill. I got all this, I got everything set up here. We got all that Apple stuff. So yeah.
All right.
Good example.
Yeah, exactly. So, Apple trades on the stock market for about $140. I don't know what it did today, but about $140 a share, right? And that is the price, what it would take to acquire one share of Apple. But that is not the value, the fundamental value. It could be the fundamental value of Apple, but it doesn't necessarily have to be the fundamental value of Apple. Let's say you do a ton of work. You look at all the financial statements, you listen to earnings calls, you talk to management teams, you talk to experts, and you come up with this model, and the fundamental value is not $140, but it's $200. That would make Apple an undervalued or asset. And what you'd want to do is you want to purchase Apple for $140, knowing that the price should appreciate up to $200. Then you're capturing $60 worth of value in each share that you bought, or about 20% upside there. And that's what we're talking about when it comes to fantasy football, trying to capture that value. Let's talk a little bit about what fundamental value means. How do you get up? How do you come up with that? What $200 is? In investing, through Warren Buffett and Benjamin Graham, I personally use a DCF model, a discounted cash flow model, which is basically projecting out all the cash flows of a company, and then discounting it back to its present value, and dividing it by the shares, and you come up with a price. So that's how I would get to the $200 of Apple's fundamental value. There's lots of different ways that you can come up with fundamental value. One way that's commonly used is a multiple analysis. People talk about that as like a comparative or relative analysis or a ratio analysis. And one of the most common ratios that people use is, investors use, is the PE ratio. And that is price to earnings ratio. And so the numerator in that is the stock's price per share. So that would be in the Apple example, that would be $140. And the denominator, the earnings, is a company's earnings per share. So you take the price divided by the earnings and you get a ratio. So let's call it 10. And then you take that 10 and you compare it to another company's PE ratio. So let's say, I don't know, Google, or I don't know, what's a comparative company to Apple? There is none because it's so big, right? But Hewlett Packard or Dell, or I don't know. So you come up with their PE ratio, and let's say that's a 12. So you're looking at one company that has a PE ratio of 10 and one company that has a PE ratio of 12. And the way the PE ratio works is the lower the PE, the more value you're getting from that particular investment. And so just from a sheer ratio perspective, the lower P, the more earnings you're getting per increment of price. And so that's sort of the basis behind, how to come up with these fundamental player values, fundamental values of companies. And so what I did was I took that multiple PE ratio as a way to come up with fundamental values and compare companies and applied it to fantasy football. So the P in fantasy football, the price, the numerator, I figured out that the best way to represent price is a player's number assigned to him on keep trade cut. So, keep trade cut is a dynasty calculator where everybody's inputting whether they'd keep trade or cut one of three players, and then it pushes these players around so that it gives them a numerical value for what their price should be. And then they take those prices, those numerical values, and try and line them up so that each side of the trade equation equals out. Well, I'm taking those keep trade cut prices, and I'm using that as my numerator, the price. And then the denominator is fantasy points per game. So just like a company has earnings from their operations, the player has earnings from their games that they play on an individual game basis, so points per game. So again, like, you know, the company's PE ratio, I'm taking a player's price, his KTC number, and dividing it by his points per game, his earnings. And you get the PE. And then you take that PE with similar assets. So, you know, Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson, just like we did Apple and Hewlett-Packard or Apple and Dell. And you compare them to each other, and whichever one has the lower PE, you're getting more fantasy points per game, per unit of price, per unit of KTC. So it's an interesting way to think about how to value players. So that's sort of the thesis around sort of the valuation value as a strategy concept. And then I mentioned accountability. So along with sort of coming up with this way to value players and way to compare players, I'm also giving you a recommendation. So I'm saying you should buy or sell or hold a particular player. And I'm also giving you a price target. So I'm coming up with this fundamental value that is potentially different from what its current price is, and giving you some upside or downside and telling you, so I think Ja'Marr Chase is a buy. I think his, well, let's not use Ja'Marr Chase. Let's use player X as a buy. His KTC price is currently 5,000. I think his KTC target price should be 6,000. So there is 20% upside to this player. And then it gives your audience the ability to sort of know how confident you are in a re certain recommendation. And it also lets you create sort of this track record of how successful you are of giving recommendations. And, you know, that's something I noticed in the fantasy space. You'll see a lot of analysts that say, there's a buy this guy, and they do that for 30 players, and then 3 months later, they screenshot that they said, buy this guy, without sort of telling you know, how much upside there is, or, you know, a limiting to a certain number of buys or not. But they say, yeah, hey, look, I told you to buy this guy, but, you know, the hit rate was maybe 1 out of 20 or 1 out of 15. Now we're keeping track of these buys and sells. I'm telling you what the target price is. I'm closing out trades, and I'm showing you explicitly what a track record looks like for these ideas. And so that's sort of the second part of this intelligent investor series is, yeah, here's a new way to value players and compare players. And then also here's a new way to think about how you should give recommendations and prove a track record over time so that your audience knows who they can look for and who they want to take advice from over time.
Yeah, for sure. It's very, very interesting. The second half of it, what I really like and kind of, I guess, equate it to is that it's very easy, like you said, to just say, buy this or, trade for this player. He's a screaming buy. But like the deeper truth is that there's, varying degrees to all of that, right? Like it might be worth buying a guy for, a mild improvement from year to year because the price doesn't match up with it, or it might be worth buying a guy because he's a total afterthought in most places and has the upside to way outproduce. So, I think what you said is a great point. It's very easy to just, scream from the mountaintops, buy 100 different guys with no backing it up or no kind of, I guess, no real gumption or proof to go with it. And not that the proof needs to always be there, but giving a thought or a why is super important, something that doesn't happen enough, I don't think.
So, what I'm trying to do is, like, you know, just like analysts on the stock market would, I give you a buy, a target price, and upside. And then when I'm done with the trade, I'll lock in. I'll say, okay, I'm downgrading this guy from a buy to a hold. So I'm no longer putting my emphasis on buying this guy, and I'm keeping track of that. So you can see all these buy sells over time. Then, you know, when I recommended a buy, it was at this KTC, And when I recommended a downgrade to hold, it's at this KCT, KTC. This is the appreciation that we've got from the recommendation, or this is how much I messed up on that recommendation. And you can kind of prove out that you've created this value, this price appreciation in KTC in it. I don't know. I think that was something that frustrated me. So I'm trying to maybe normalize, maybe getting out there where you establish this track record so people know who they can rely on and who they can take advice from.
Yeah, 100% agree. Let me ask you, when you're going through all this stuff, does it vary at all, like from position to position, or is it just the keep trade cut number, the fantasy points per game? Second thing that I'm thinking of now as I'm saying this out loud that I meant to ask you earlier, so I'm going to come back to it. How do you treat it like incoming rookie? You're not, not a Devy League, straight up dynasty league, rookie draft. Are you using fantasy points per game from college season prior or projected for the rookie season?
This is actually something I went through recently. So, the first six volumes were based on 2021 projected, or I'm sorry, actual points per game. So when you do the PE, you're using 2021 points per game. Volume 7 and volume 8, I switched over to projected 2022 points per
Oh,
game.
I like that.
So in the volume 7, I kind of did it half and half. So I did part of it in volume 7. Volume 8 has yet to be released. It's actually with my editor. It'll be released probably before the show airs. But volume 7, what I looked at was the earnings growth. So I looked at 2022 points per game growth over 2021 points per game and called out sort of where's the biggest risers and fallers that consensus is projecting. Now, who am I to tell Mike Clay that he's wrong on his projections? So I'm not going through each of these individual players and saying, well, I don't think that's right. What I'm trying to do is basically trying to find inefficiencies in where people are pricing things versus how many points you're getting from them using that PE ratio. So the way the rookies come in, they obviously weren't involved in the 2021 process. I basically just ignored that them. And then when I switched to 2022 process, I put them in clusters based on where I thought their prospect profile would fit. So clusters, I know you've heard of rankings and tiers. Clusters is what I was using to sort of bucket these players into like for like categories. So when you're using a PE, it's really hard to compare Ja'Marr Chase to Julio Jones. It doesn't make sense. They'll have different valuations. The PE for Ja'Marr Chase should be way higher than the PE for Julio Jones. So I'm separating them into clusters like Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson and comparing those two guys on a like for like basis and go all the way down. But the clusters are divvied up into age, upside potential, and similar production. So, rookies, I have to make a call. Where do I want to put them in? Which cluster do I want to put them in? And that's the hardest aspect of how to put these rookies into this model. So does Drake London and Treylon Burks fit into the really core upside players like Jaylen Waddle or CeeDee Lamb or something like that? Who should I be comparing those guys to? And so that's sort of how to think about how the rookies go in there. But I wanted to touch just a little bit on how we come up with that fundamental value using the clusters. So once we get these players into these clusters, how do we come up with that target price? So you get your grouping of Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson into one cluster, and they each have their own PE. And then what you do is you take the average of those PE and you times each one of those guys, sort of reversing out of that PE equation, times their projected 2022 points per game, and you get a target price. So that's how you're sort of getting the target price. And all that kind of stems from a reversion to mean. So the theory there is that guys that are in the same cluster, have the same sort of production profile, they're the same sort of age, and they have the same sort of upside potential, they should be valued somewhat similarly. So guys that are overvalued there then becomes sort of sells in the model, and guys that are undervalued become buys in that model, just by using sort of an average reversion to the mean concept. So in this volume 8 that's coming out, you know, I put these rookies in, I switched everything over to 2020 points per game, so you have a different earnings growth and all these new inputs, right? And it changed the outputs of the model. So I have volume 8 is a lot of, we're going to upgrade these names, we're going to downgrade these names. These are my new buys, which it turns out that I got 16 buys of decent size upside and 10 sells, 10 new sells that I'm going to, you know, recommend now. So that's sort of, you know, what volume 7 and volume 8 are getting into.
That's awesome. I can't wait to read it. That sounds fantastic. When you're going through it, like working through it, you know, volume 7, volume 8, volume 9, however many are coming, you know, over the long haul, just as you're going through it, is there, you get a cluster of players together, right? A handful of however many guys that you're looking at. Is there something that, like, before you've even seen like what the end result is, right? Like the end number, what it tells you, is there something like along the way through the process where you see it and you're immediately like, oh, no way, I'm going to be super out on this player, like for whatever reason, just like, is there like a threshold, I guess, associated with like the cost to acquire something where before you even dive into it, you're like, I think I feel pretty good that this is going to be a little bit out of whack.
Yeah. So, you know, this process is about sort of being player agnostic. It's not about who's a good player or who's a bad player. It's about
value proposition,
price and fundamental value. And sure, it'd be awesome. This is something I actually talk about in the series, a good player versus a good investment. Apple stock, right? Everybody knows Apple. Everybody kind of thinks it's a good company. You buy a lot of their products, you understand it. But until you do the work, all you know is that it's a good company. So if you're going out and just buying Apple shares just on that, you're just buying Apple stock because it's a good company. But you haven't done the work. You don't know whether that stock should fundamentally be worth, we said it's trading at 140. So what if it's fundamentally worth $100? You're buying it because it's a good company. You like the outlook, right? But you don't know too much about it. When you actually dig into the numbers, maybe it's not worth $140. Maybe it's worth $100. And then I think that applies to fantasy football a little bit too. Good players can be good investments or bad investments. It just depends on what the fundamental value is versus its current price. And I'm gonna oscillate with that. If a player looks undervalued, I'm gonna buy them. And then, you know, that player could just kind of rocket ship off. And you know, he starts putting up really good weeks of production and everybody starts saying, oh man, this guy's a really good player. And then he gets to be too expensive. It's a pendulum. It goes from very inexpensive, you buy it, and then it shifts and it swings so far to the other side and it becomes too expensive. And then that same player who, you know, I think is good, then becomes a sell just because his price doesn't justify how many points per game he's producing for you. And so I'm trying to say, okay, you know, my view on a player, even though they might be my favorite player or I really like him, I'm going to take that out of the equation and I'm going to just go off of what do I think this player is worth versus what his price is. And that will change over time. I'll have guys that will go from screaming buys to very hard sells over a season. And you know, that's stuff I'm looking forward to. It is sometimes, if people don't understand the concept of how I'm thinking about it, it is sometimes a little bit hard to explain that, hey, you know, I don't know, AJ Dillon was a sell, you know, 4 months ago. Now, you know, why are you having him as a buy, you know, 3 months later? And that's not the case. I still have AJ Dillon as a sell, but, you know, just giving you sort of an example, it becomes a little bit hard to explain, but it's sort of about the process, and the process is finding those discrepancies between price and earnings. And even if I like a guy, if he gets too expensive, I'll sell him. And if I hate a guy that gets too cheap, maybe hate's a strong word. I don't hate anybody, but if I don't think he's that great of a player and he gets too cheap, I'll still buy him as well, because all I'm looking for is that price appreciation so I can capture some of that value.
Yeah, I think it probably throws people off like initially, because it's much easier to just say you like something or you dislike something and stick with it forever. But the respectable thing about it is it's a very disciplined, I think, approach to just kind of be committed to what the value is and, you know, play the league or play the pool accordingly. Go ahead.
And that's not to say that trying to figure out who's a good player and not is not invaluable. That's incredibly valuable. And really what you want to do is you want it all to line up. You want a guy that's a good player that ends up being a good investment. And those are the home runs. Those are the ones you pound the table on. Buy this guy. And that's the kind of stuff I like. Those are the ones that I get really super confident on.
So. Yeah, absolutely. So I guess we'll close out here. So if you had to, you know, you give somebody the elevator pitch, right, on the premise as a whole, if you had to give, you know, one or two tips to somebody who's trying to apply principles like these in their league, whether they're new to Dynasty or they've been playing for a long time, what's like the boil it down to brass tacks elevator pitch that you'd give them?
Yeah, so I think people should think about fantasy football from an investor's mindset, and you're trying to create value through trading and drafting. And the way you create value is you find guys that are undervalued and you buy them, and you sell guys that are overvalued. And so, I mean, that's basically the big premise there is the only other thing I'd say is, you know, when you're taking in information, you know, do some homework. Know where you're getting your information, listen to the community. And, you know, I'm trying to bring up, you know, let's be more accountable as fantasy analysts. So, you know, try and see, figure out what their track record is. You know, ask guys who are giving advice what their track record is and how they can talk about it. And then I guess one other thing I'd say, this is maybe a little bit unrelated to the concept, but you know, when we're talking about Dynasty Fantasy Football, I also do a lot of Devy content. My recommendation to anybody that plays Dynasty is to play in Devy leagues or C2C leagues or college leagues. Because I think fundamentally it'll make you a better Dynasty player. When it comes to rookie drafts, when it comes to understanding the different classes and who's available in each of the classes, as in, like, you could be at the forefront of trying to trade for 2023 first or trying to trade for 2024 first because you know such and such guy is coming out and you have a good understanding. And it doesn't have to be one particular or the other, but just kind of getting a feel for what these players are capable of. Is pretty important for Dynasty players. So and one of my big recommendations I tell people is, even if it's not high stakes, even if you don't care too much about it, go out and participate and see what people are talking about in terms of Devy or C2C or even just playing college fantasy football. And I think that'll help you tremendously in Dynasty. A couple other, I guess, advice items. So league settings is super important to anybody playing Dynasty. We got the Scott Fish Bowl coming up soon. And, you know, one of the things that from that perspective is understanding, you know, what the scoring format it is. It's different than how most people play traditional fantasy football or super flex football. And so, you know, anybody that's going out and joining dynasty leagues really become familiar with those league settings and understand the scoring format and all the aspects to that league will help you, because you have a lot of guys that come in, you know, don't read the rule book, and then you get to drafting and it they end up with a team that sort of ends up being a big dog and you're able to sort of take advantage of that. And so yeah, those are my couple suggestions there.
Yeah, big time agree on all of them. And Devi will for sure make you a better dynasty player, and C2C will make you a better Devi player, and they all kind of you know, go hand in hand down the line. But Jay, I appreciate you coming on and breaking down the series for us. It's incredibly interesting. It makes a ton of sense. People can find it with the Dynasty Nerds. Does it come out on a specific day or on a specific timeline, or just like cranking out the volumes whenever you can get through them?
Yeah, I'm cranking out all the volumes when I get to them. I'm doing about between Devi articles and this series, I'm doing about two or three a month. Okay. Kind of depends on like with the young kids, how, you know, how much time I have to work on something. But it's weird, you know, writing content. Sometimes you just kind of have to go when you get the inspiration.
Yeah.
So sometimes I'll like wake up and just pound out an article like in an hour. And sometimes it takes me 2 weeks to get through it just because I don't have the inspiration. So it really varies, but I have like a timeline of things I want to get through in the series. The switching over to 2022 projected points was a big transition in the series. And so now, you know, I've kind of given my recommendations based on the 2021s. Now I'm working on 2022 projected, and that's going to change some things. And I'm excited to talk about sort of what those changes are and what my new recommendations are. So yeah, at least one or two a month should be coming.
Cool, man. It's awesome stuff. Everybody can find it with the Dynasty Nerds. You can follow Jay on Twitter @_JasonStein. Jay, appreciate it again, joining us and chopping it up, explaining it to the people.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on. Appreciate it.
Thanks again to Jay for taking the time to join the podcast and break down everything he's put together for the Intelligent Investor series. Really interesting stuff. Really enjoyed talking with him about it. And again, make sure to check it out over at Dynasty Nerds, where there's tons of great content, including all Jay's work, plus lots of other stuff that you can check out as well. So I appreciate everybody for listening to another episode of the podcast. We'll be back next week with kind of some more great stuff to work through as we work through the dog days of summer here. But training camp is right around the corner. We'll have some actual NFL news to sink our teeth into as the regular season kind of barrels on, or, you know, approaches at breakneck pace. It'll be here before we know. We got to get through these dog days of summer, and football will be back. It's right around the corner. But with training camps approaching, we'll get some real news, and that's always something to get excited about. So I appreciate everybody listening. Again, you can follow me on Twitter @DynastyDrive, and we'll talk to you guys next week. Thanks.